We spent again last week a considerable amount of time on the subject of prayer because, after all, that is our major channel of communication with God, so we need to understand about it. Again, in sort of a bottom line statement, I want to encourage you to take the attitude and position of the child with the parent who has always the right to come and talk, even if things are not all peachy keen. You know, things may not always be very good between a parent and a child or a young person. And I am totally opposed to the idea of presenting long lists of reasons why the Lord won't hear us, because that puts him in a position where he has less grace than the parents who always want to hear their young people, even though they're not in the best of relationships. So reminding you again how delighted a parent is that the young person wants to come and talk. So I take that stance, and the Bible makes that clear, that Paul says we ought always to pray and not to faint, that is, not to be weary in praying. So many, many passages give us the reason to believe that God is certainly at least as gracious as our human parents. I'm sure he's much more gracious than we are. I'm going to move on then. With reference to the needs of the saints, fellowshipping in them or with them, you may have different translations of this expression, but the main thrust here is that we ought to share in the needs of the saints. First of all, we have to just understand what a saint is. Now, you must understand that a saint is not a very special person as ordained by some religious hierarchy. The usage the Bible makes of the word saint is merely one set apart, and the word saint comes from the word sanctify. To make a saint of is to sanctify. And I think all of you have here or there run into the word sanctify as referring to setting something apart. To sanctify the vessels of the temple, for example, means to set them apart for special usage. Now, we are set apart to God when we become his children. We're a special possession of his. We belong to him. That's all that it means to be a saint, is one who is set apart to God by virtue of having become a Christian or having taken Christ into the Spirit. So you don't have to be a good person to be called a saint in the biblical term. But we've been, I'm going to say it boldly, we've been robbed of that term by certain religious applications. And I don't mean to be uncharitable, but it's unfortunate that the word has been stolen and made to apply to people that are special, and robbed us of the right to be called saints, who are just merely children of God and set apart, therefore, for his purpose. So when Paul says fellowshipping with the needs of the saints, he is outlining here or identifying a group of people that are simply the members of the family, of God's family. First, we'll look at the word fellowshipping or sharing. Sharing in people's needs is a different thing than just giving them a handout. Sharing in needs means to empathize with them in the need, as well as to assist in the matter. It isn't good enough just to drop a quarter in the hat. You know, you have to also be sensitive to the needs of this person. So when we talk about Christian charities or about charities at all, we have to understand that it is not the business of the church to feed the world. There have been quite a few religious organizations that have risen up on that base, and they collect large sums of money from the church to do that. It may seem to you just a little bit inhumane to complain about that, but the order that God gives us is that we feed our family. That the Christian is a family of believers. So somebody says, well, what about the rest of the world? We ought to look at that for just a minute. Here, for example, in America, even though we have a lot of people that are not particularly godly, yet the fundamental base of America is God-oriented. We look to God in general for our crops. You say, well, people don't pray that much and so on. I would say that probably the major American attitude is, even though there are lots of contrary views and so forth, the basic attitude is that we thank God for what we have. On Thanksgiving Day, that's our thrust. Here's a whole national holiday set aside to thank God. What is the Thanksgiving for? See? You're not going to thank the rocks or the worms in the soil. You're thanking somebody, you're not thanking yourself. Thanksgiving Day is, and universally throughout America, Thanksgiving Day is a day of thanksgiving to God. The tenor of this country not to be godless but to be godly, even if we have a large number of independent souls that are either indifferent to God or unimpressed with Him. But our major thrust is godly. Now that I've run into that everywhere I've gone in America. If people choose not to base their culture on the concept of God, and therefore perhaps have not been blessed as much with grain as we, then why should we be responsible to feed them? Now, if you're talking about a national enterprise, that's something else. After all, our charities are tightly controlled by the government. They tell us what charities to give them because the taxation is what is the basis of our charities to this country and others. But as a Christian, my responsibility is to other members of the family, of the faith. Otherwise, we're spread too thin. But you see, if we give to our particular group of people, to our fellow believers, if the Buddhists want to support Buddhists, that's fine. If every group would support their own, the problem would be solved. In a certain respect, that's an oversimplification, perhaps. So you see the difference here. I'm not saying we ought to let the world go hungry, and I am much in favor of our governments reaching out to other governments of the world and other peoples of the world. I've been much in favor of that. But as an individual matter, to have to undertake the burden of feeding the world is too much, because where do you stop? You know, if you can give $10 to the Food for the Hungry program, why shouldn't you give 20? You can get into a real bad frame there, because the moment you start to buy something extra for yourself, you say, oh, wait a minute, I should take that money and give it to Food for the Hungry. Well, logically, that might be true. You can get on a treadmill that way if you let yourself think about it. The answer to it, the solution to the matter, is that we look around us and take care of the people that are within our own frame of reference. And that's not too big a burden for us. And in the early church, that's what they did with their money. They were not building magnificent cathedrals with their money in the early church. They were giving the money to help each other in many different ways. There are lots of ways believers could help each other. Of course, in today's society, there is a lot of need for money to help get the word out, because it's a different thing. In Paul's day, you get on a donkey and you ride out some village and talk about the gospel. It doesn't take much money to do that. Even taking a ship to Rome wasn't all that expensive. Today it costs money to move about and to give the word out. So we understand that money. But the church has spent an awful lot of money padding its pews and so forth and living in plush surroundings. If they want to do that, sorry. Although there's a very practical thing that one ought to think about in terms of building buildings. Giving money to build a building is not giving money to Christ. That is not giving to the work, because people build buildings because they want to be comfortable. If you don't like your quarters and you feel they ought to be more splendid and you would like to collect money to build more splendid quarters, that ought not to be looked upon as something you're giving to Christ. It's something you're giving to your comfort. Nothing wrong with it, provided that's not regarded as money given for the work of Christ. So we don't put any money in a building. We put it into getting the word out to people. Now, if I wanted to make the people more comfortable in the building, I wouldn't say, come and give to Jesus, give me money for a building. I would say, if you want to be more comfortable and have a softer seat, dig into your jeans and let's build a building and become more comfortable. But I wouldn't say, let's build a building to the glory of God, because there's no glory to God in a building. He doesn't dwell in temples made with hands. And I have found that if you have content in your message, people will come to hear it. If you don't have any content, you may have to attract them in with a fancy building. If you haven't got a whole lot to say, at least they can be comfortable. On a summer's day, it's pleasant to go to an air-conditioned building and sit for an hour or two and be entertained with various things. All of that, I say in this direction, that whereas I recognize that today, things being what they are, it takes money to get the word out in ways it didn't in Paul's day. On the other hand, we are giving money to the Lord in a more particular way when we give it to help one another, to feed the members of the body. Because people come into difficulty, people get without work. But the point I'm saying, it's an interlocking thing. It's not just a matter of giving a person a dollar for a meal. It's a matter of an interlocking fellowship where we are sensitive to the needs of the saints. And that includes prayer. When we accompany the prayer with practical help. So instead of just saying, Lord, give that person some money, we may have to dig into our own genes, you see. And give them, and help them. And they help all through the fellowship. Their needs that I don't even know about, but other people know, and they take care of them among themselves. That's what it means, sharing in the needs of the saints. And it means being sensitive to our fellow believers regarding their needs, whether it be for financial assistance or for counseling or for prayer help or for comforts. Whatever it is, we're a family. As simple as that. So, this is the essence of this, but I don't want people to... A lot of times this leverage is used with a verse like this to get people to feel responsible for feeding the world. And we're not responsible to feed the world. We ought to come on the basis that we're so grateful for whatever help we get, rather than on the basis that you owe us. But that's the mood of America today, and in some quarters, at least, you owe us a living. The direction in which I'm trying to move you is that just because we're Christians doesn't mean we have to feed the world. But as believers, we ought to share with one another in the family of Christ. I say that to you so that you won't be burdened down with guilt over these matters. Because you could easily do that, though. You have the poor around you always. Once you got down the line of feeling that every time you pass somebody with a handout, you ought to give them something, you're in a difficult position. Down in our area, there are lots of people that are panhandling and people looking for handouts. If you stopped and gave everybody that wanted a handout, gave them something, you'd spend all the time giving away money. But the spirit of the thing is what counts. So we care to help people. But we only do what we can. If we overextend ourselves, we get into trouble. People who undertake to do something they're not going to be able to carry out are causing more difficulty than they're giving help. See, for example, let's say that there's a family that has need and people can get a little carried away with helping and then they overextend themselves to help that person. Then they find that they've gotten a rat hole there to throw sand down and it's just endless. The demands are endless. Perhaps you've come into situations like that where you reach out to help somebody and it becomes too big a burden. You have to kind of measure this out instead of just saying, well, because I'm a Christian, I ought to do this. Let me give you an example, a more practical example, because that's kind of vague. This has not necessarily to do with money, but let's say, for example, there's a young person that needs a home. And so a family decides to take that young person in, foster home or whatever. They do it because they think, well, we're Christians, we ought not to turn them out. And then the burden becomes too great, and it begins to tear the family apart. I've seen this in a number of different cases. The person would like to be rid of the burden, but they feel because they're Christians, they ought not to give up that burden, you see. Well, that can tear a family apart. I know families that have adopted children without realizing the problems that that child has, then later on find they're just not able to cope with the problems. Now, the way I look at it, and I've tried to help people with this factor, because you see, the welfare department will not let people, generally speaking, not let them off the hook. At least they don't want to let them off the hook. You took this child, now you're stuck with it. It's their attitude, generally. And I've had to go to court on some of these matters. If you've brought the child into the world, that's a different thing. It's your mistake. Actually, it is a mistake. Children, not all mistakes. But sometimes children are born under unsound conditions, and that would be a mistake, you see. Yeah, let's say a girl gets pregnant or something before her marriage, and so now she has this problem with a child and so forth. But one brings a child into the world, then they have a responsibility to that child. But when you have tried to help somebody else's mistake, and you've said, well, we're going to take that child and try to help the child, and then you find out that it just doesn't work. A lot of times the background is very sketchy if you apply to adopt a child. Maybe it's purposely that way, but they don't give you the details of the genetic background of that child. Sometimes there are genetic problems that are just unresolvable by the average person. We have a situation, we have had it, it's now getting resolved, but with by the time this child got to the teen level, it was beating up on the mother and breaking up furniture and doing all kinds of things. The parents had the feeling that, well, we're Christians, we can't give this child up because we're Christian. That wouldn't be a Christian thing to do. And I said, it's just not practical. I said, consider it like a divorce. You know, you took the child in the hope to help it, but you find you're not able to do it. You've done your best. It'd be nice to say, well, the Lord will help you. That can be pretty ivory towerish, you know. It's nice. It's a nice religious thought, but it doesn't always work out that way. And I've seen lots of prayers go up for certain individuals, and it just hasn't made the difference. There are other factors to consider, and I have seen in my years of life that the Lord does not always represent the handyman to work out every problem you've got. Despite the songs that say the Savior can solve every problem, there are problems that are not within the framework of practicality. That may be disillusioning to you, but there are some situations that the Lord has not chosen to change, or perhaps not been able to, because, for example, people do things and make choices in their lives that you just can't reverse. You marry somebody and you can divorce them, but you can't reverse the fact that you married that person. So I'm really saying to you that not every situation is going to be resolved by the Christian consciousness. This all in a direction, very practical direction, of saying to you, when you think in terms of Christian charity to help someone, before you start down the road, weigh it out to be sure you're not biting off more than you can chew. That's all I'm saying. You undertake to help someone. You may, for example, decide, well, as a Christian, I'm going to take the child into the home so this mother can work because she needs to work to make a living or whatever. And then you take the child in and you find out it's tearing up your own home, you know. That's just a hypothetical case. Pray and be sure this is something the Lord wants them to do. Christians do a lot of things out of sentimentality, just because we're Christians and we ought to do this and this and this, but sometimes they do things that are beyond their strength. We have to be practical about it. And before you reach out with some kind of a thing that may be over your head to help somebody you're not qualified to help, to take under your wing someone that needs more professional care than you can give, or needs more understanding or knowledge than you have, before you do that, you ought to think twice and you ought to pray about it. If you went with quiet for a few weeks, well, I said, you're not going to just try it. What are you going to do when you decide you want to get rid of her? It's important to understand that it is not necessarily the right thing or the Christian thing to do to reach out to help people unless we have what it takes to do it, unless we're able to follow through on it. And it's not being unchristian to turn opportunities down. Christians are awful suckers sometimes. And Christian parents sometimes take a lot more from their children, from young people, than they ought to take on the same basis. Now, that's a difficult statement because there's so many intricacies to that, so many variables. But sometimes a parent may try to be too soft in the name of being a Christian, but it isn't always Christian to be soft-hearted. So you have to understand what your levels and limits are. Now, another illustration of this, we're in a location down there where we've had quite a few transients come by. They've come back to the office for a handout. And the rule there is, we have a relationship to a rescue mission. Somebody comes and they need that kind of help. Here is a ticket, and here is car fare to go to the place. And you'll get the help you need there. You'll get bed and you'll get board or whatever. Because they're set up to handle that. See? Down in our area, once an organization is found to be a soft touch and it becomes known, pretty soon the stream starts coming. See? You can be soft-hearted and soft-headed about charity. So let's draw the guidelines here in this matter of sharing with the needs of the saints. To first say our responsibility is the saints. Now if you have some extra change and you want to give it to the cancer drive or whatever else, that's perfectly all right, but that's extra. That's something you do of your own. As far as Christian responsibility, our task is to reach out within the limits of our capacity to help others that are brought into our lives in one way or another as sharing with them in their needs. Same is true with your giving to the church. If somebody's got a big thermometer on the front of the church and they get up and try to get that thermometer line raised, it isn't necessarily your responsibility to see that the red line goes higher. You know. Pray. If this is what the Lord wants you to do, that's fine, but not all giving is automatically of God, you know. It's not a matter of being religious, it's a matter of being sensitive to the Spirit to reach out to other believers around us with help. And that is based upon the sense of caring that the Spirit of God places within us when He comes, or brings with Him when He comes. Give and share to the limits of your faith. As Paul says that right in the same book, in fact, the same chapter earlier, he said, we ought not to think of ourselves more highly than we ought to think, but level-headedly, according as God has given to everyone the measure of faith. Don't go beyond your faith. Do what your heart is glad to do, and you are able to do, but don't try to go beyond that till you come to grief. Don't give beyond your means. I don't care what they say on the radio or from the platform, overextending yourself with pledges, it will not automatically be followed up by God paying the bill. It isn't right for ministers to urge people to give
beyond their budget on the thin line that if you do that, the Lord will come along and make up for it. If the Lord has given you the gift of giving, He will also give you the wherewithal to give. So our people in the fellowship that the Lord has blessed abundantly, but they've also given abundantly. But it's not the cart before the horse. He hasn't blessed them because they gave. He blessed them so they could give. And they've given, you see. The other is a pure investment scam. But it is a continual con of the past masters of that art who want you to believe that it's a great financial investment. The more you give to God, the more He'll give back to you. So you end up only making an investment. You might as well play the market. And so when the appeal is, if you'll give God $10, He'll give you back $20, that's a pretty good investment. It has nothing to do with the spirit of giving. You give whether you get back or not. A lot of people I know that have given sacrificially have not necessarily had the coffers of heaven opened up and flowed upon them abundantly. So this is very sound words here. Share in the needs of the saints. He isn't saying give handouts to people. Share in the needs of the saints, but do it, as verse 3 says, according to the measure of your faith. And if there's somebody that needs help and you feel that you have the capacity to help them in whatever way, do it. In Matthew, Jesus said, give to him that asks of you and don't ask it again. You're talking about a condition in the world in those days where the streets were lined with beggars. It was a Jewish situation, and the Jews gave alms as part of their faith, but he didn't say to become a sucker. But what he's saying there is that if you believe that this person genuinely needs your help, and that the Spirit of the Lord would like you to help them. Help them, but don't loan the money, expecting them to pay it back. So don't lend money to people just because they're Christians or you're Christian. Probably the worst basis on which you could ever lend anybody money is that they're Christian. Christians have a wonderful way of figuring that the end justifies the means. I'm not going to go further than that, but I'm trying to be practical about it, because if we're not practical, we get stuck with things we can't carry out, and then we get under guilt feelings. Well, I've got to stop here. I want to come through with something that gives you sensitivity and understanding and also consolation to believe that your heart does belong to Christ and you do care about people. But it is often an intricate problem to know just how to give. I told one fellow in a situation that someone wanted to borrow his car, and I said, well, this fellow is the kind of person that would run your car to the ground and look around for somebody else to borrow a car from. And I said, I don't think I would do it, you know. There are people like that. They use up everything you've got and then they look for somebody else to use their stuff up too. I'm trying to be practical, understand? I won't get great gold stars in heaven probably, but at least I may help to keep you on an even keel. Well, let's pray.